New Westminster's Tumasout Aquatic and Community Center is turning heads and winning awards. The state-of-the-art facility, whose name Tumasout is the Hunkaminam word for sea otter house, has achieved a RHF Accessibility Certified Gold rating under the Rick Hansen Foundation's Accessibility Certification Program, and won the Prix Versailles 2024 World Title Special Prize for an Interior in the sports category. The Prix Versailles is an award based on a review of architectural media from around the world, highlighting the most discussed projects within the architecture community. Paul Fast, principal architect for the firm HCMA, which designed the Tumasout Aquatic and Community Center, explains why Tumasout was selected as the 2024 winner.
Well, the project has achieved a number of notable firsts, which has really helped elevate it to a fairly prominent position in the media over the past few months. And so it's the first all-electric aquatic center of its kind, which is a whole new way of thinking about this typology of building. It's the first zero-carbon design aquatic facility in Canada. It achieved incredibly high standards for accessibility and inclusion through a number of design interventions. And so I think all of these things in combination really created a project that grabbed people's attention. And so it's been featured quite extensively in the media. And people are paying attention because they're looking for projects that are sort of defining what the future is of this building type in the design world.
As a public, community-oriented facility, the Tumasout Aquatic and Community Center sticks out from its competition, including large-scale projects like the Olympic Aquatic Center in Saint-Denis, France, and Gillette Stadium in Foxborough, Massachusetts, home of the National Football League's New England Patriots.
I think it's a fantastic validation of the importance of this building type in sports architecture. Most awards programs, when they focus on sports buildings, tend to focus on the really large kind of mega projects and stadiums. And of course, those have their own kind of impact. But we know that recreation is incredibly important to communities, to the everyday life of people here in our country. And we know that these buildings play a crucial role in the kind of social fabric of communities. And so for this building to be recognized amongst those other really large scale projects is really satisfying and rewarding.
The building is also notable for its use of and relationship to the surrounding landscape, which Fast says is a great example of architecture that works with the land instead of against it.
It's actually one of my favorite parts of the whole story of the building, because if you look back at the original condition of that site, sort of pre-settlement or pre-contact, there was a ravine there which we named Glenbrook Ravine. And that ravine was a natural feature that had an ecology around it. The First Nations used it for various things. It was over, as settlement occurred, they put a 2-meter sewer line down the bottom of it and then backfilled it with all sorts of junk. And it really became kind of a symbol of the way in which we work against the land rather than with it. So one of the first steps for our building design process was to actually say, let's bring back the memory of that ravine, because it was important and it was lost and it's worth recognizing. So rather than take the building and orient the building to the street grid, we said, let's turn the whole building so it faces the ravine. And it essentially, we're saying that the most important thing for this building is to interact with the memory of that ravine. And so we created this large public green space that is essentially the reincarnation at a surface level of that ravine landscape, and made all of the building windows face into it, all of the kind of key building alignments, circulation pathways feed into that kind of green space. And so some of the things we're learning from our Indigenous friends is that the principles around how you build with land as opposed to against it, that was one of the key moments. It also allowed us to, one of the other funny things about the street grid in New Westminster is it doesn't face perfectly north. And so if you build a building that aligns with the street grid, it will not face perfectly north. It faces about a 45-degree angle off. That becomes really important for a pool, because how you bring light into a pool is really important. You need to control it for glare and for lifeguarding safety, all those things. And so not only aligning the building with the ravine not only gave us a powerful connection to the landscape, but it brought in a north-facing light that was really comfortable and safe and really pleasant for people in swimming in the pool. So those are some of the strategies we used then when we say working with the land as opposed to against it.
A key reason for the city's Prix Versailles title is the focus on accessibility, which was also recognized through its achievement of an RHF Accessibility Certified Gold rating from the Rick Hansen Foundation's Accessibility Certification Program. Mayor Patrick Johnstone says the building, which is the City of New Westminster's largest capital project to date, was designed for people of all ages and abilities from the ground up, with accessibility in mind.
The city took an intentional approach to accessibility in this building. When we were doing the design work and the planning work with the community 5-6 years ago, the accessibility community talked about the importance of including accessibility at the design phase. Quite often you will build a building like this, you'll design a building, and then you will add on the accessibility elements to make sure that everyone has access to it. But we were intentional in starting right at the beginning with the design and having the accessibility community tell us what accessibility meant to them and giving that to the designers, but then also including professionals who could bring an accessibility lens to every step of the design. So when it was still lines on paper, they could walk through that and actually look at the accessibility barriers and the challenges that we were creating before we created them. And the goal was, obviously, to get as close to universal accessibility as we could, but also to not have to tack things off after, to actually make it integrated into design so we save money and save time and start on the right step.
Centering accessibility and making it a key part of the Aquatic and Community Center's design is representative of the city's overall accessibility strategy, which includes in-depth community consultation and the consideration of intersecting and often contradicting accessibility needs.
Universal accessibility is the goal. It's very difficult to achieve because quite often if you design for some forms of accessibility to remove some barriers, you end up creating barriers for other forms. Things like creating very bright and vibrant color fabrics for wayfinding and such is great for people who might have visual disabilities, but it might also be a problem for people who have neurodiversity issues and may find too much sensory input, making it confusing for them to navigate a space. You try to design so that you can address both of those as best as you can and try to find the balance in that space. Some of the accessibility elements you can't add afterwards. There are things like the zero-step entry for the recreation pool that you just can't design in afterwards. It also took us a creative approach to address accessibility in the competition pool because you can't have a sloped entry into a competition pool, so we had to find another alternative that worked with the modern competition pool designs.
Brad McCannell is the Vice President of Access and Inclusion at the Rick Hansen Foundation.
There's all kinds of things the RHFAC professional will be looking for. But the other thing to recognize is that every site's different. Everybody's got a different goal in mind. The level of access provided depends on the occupancy on the site and the use of the building. So the assessor will come in and start looking for, certainly you have to meet code, you have to meet regulations, there's no doubt about that. How did you go above and beyond that?
McCannell explains that beyond providing ratings so that potential users can understand how accessible a given building might be, the Rick Hansen Foundation Accessibility Certification Program aims to shift the conversation around accessibility.
This is a cultural shift that we're looking for. This is trying to get everybody, the owner, the operator, the architect, the planner, the people swinging the hammers, to understand the old model, which is building a house or a building for 18 to 55-year-old males. That old model is not doing anybody any good because the moment you put up a building, it needs to be retrofitted. So that's killing your budgets, it's killing your sustainability rating, because I go in there and I tear everything out and drywall goes to the landfill. Understanding that what the RHFAC is actually doing is shifting culture, it's training architects, it's exposing them to ideas they haven't seen before, and most importantly, it's exposing them to the return on investment that's available.
Part of the reason for the Tummasout Aquatic and Community Center's success at achieving accessibility is that accessibility was a key focus from the beginning of the design process, instead of attempting to retrofit solutions once the center had already been built.
One of our real goals as part of the culture shift is to move accessibility, move universal design, the practical application of universal design, to move that into the normal everyday design process. This is where the victories are. You look at sustainability, for example. In the 70s, sustainability was just an academic discussion around the table. But by the new millennium, the LEED program for sustainability had moved that into common everyday building process. And they did that by simple education, by having a course offered to professionals in the field that could be recognized as their normal professional development. And it brought them along, helped them understand the real issues around sustainability. They were able to take that concept, and instead of it being something you add at the end of a project, they had people, because it was part of their normal professional development, they brought sustainability to the water cooler, to the carpool, to the lunchroom. And that's what we were able to do with the RHFAC program, by having professionals take their courses, get the accreditation. All of a sudden now it's part of the discussion everywhere. It's not something you add after the fact, like it's landscaping. The thing about aging in place solutions, the thing about the practical application of universal design, it can affect everything if you let it. And so having it part of the process, the normal design process, not something separate, not something you do after, like it's landscaping, that's a really critical piece of the whole concept.
McCannell says that this kind of accessibility-centered design is hugely important and benefits everyone, whether disabled or able-bodied.
Able-bodied people, we call you TABS. See, we got names for you too. We call you TABS because you're only temporarily able-bodied. Doesn't matter if you do a face plant when you're a teenager and you end up in a wheelchair, or you're 75 and you need a walker and a hearing aid, you will be part of our community sooner or later. The largest minority group in the world and the only one that anyone can join at any moment. Fall down the stairs, an illness, a car accident, maybe you just get old. You're going to be part of this community. It's not us and them, it's just us. This is about me, it's about you, it's about your mom.
From the Tummasout Aquatic and Community Center in New Westminster, I'm Jesse Wensloff for CJSF 90.1 FM in Burnaby, reporting. This piece was made possible with funding from the Community Radio Fund of Canada's Local Journalism Initiative. You can find this piece online at frequencynews.ca.